sun. Pois o samba está animado. O Yukeiro é samba. Este samba que é misto de maracatu. É samba de preto veio. Samba de preto du. Mas que nada. Um samba como este tão legal. Que eu quero passar. Pois o samba está animado. O que eu quero é samba. Este samba que é misto de maracatu. É samba de preto veio. Samba de preto du. Mas que nada. Um samba como este é tão legal. Você não vai querer que chegue no
is up, team. I am Janie, and I'm coming at you live from 91.5 WMFL Medford Test Reform Radio, famously. That was Mas Que Nada, a beautiful bossa nova song, maybe the bossa nova song, controversially. I don't know. Is that controversial? I feel like not. And, you know, I thought I'd start us off today with something just very, like, sunny and fun. Yesterday I was on the Somerville Community Bike Path, famously not biking, and I was walking, and past me rode what I can only describe as like a blissful family, and that blissful family was two parents, each on a bike, electric bike, by the way. Okay, and they've each got a kid in a back, what can only be described as in a like a pod. A bossa nova blaring from a JBL clip. I'm jealous, okay? Get me in the back there. You got any room back there? Like, get me in the car. Anyway, so I thought we'd start off with a little bit of that. And you might be like, oh, so excited for a bossa nova set today. Wrong. That's not what you're getting. Today, we're doing some R&B. Yeah. Yeah, I thought it would be about time today. Wow. And so if you've been in Massachusetts for the past, like, I don't know, week, you would know that the weather has been, it's been a little bit inconsistent, to say the least. You know, sometimes we're getting chilly, chilly, cold weather. And then other times we're getting, like, today, we're getting tropics. We're getting hot. And in some ways it's exciting because after two cold days in a row, I was like, I wish I could wear this outfit, this warm weather outfit, if only there was a time. So I'd just like to formally apologize for wishing warm weather upon us in the midst of October. That's my bad, guys. I'll keep it under wraps next time. Yeah, I have, dare I say, an exciting show planned. It's exciting for me, as per usual, because I don't do things on the radio that are not exciting. And you might have seen, if you're here from my Instagram story and you were like, hey, Janie, why was the Instagram story for the radio today a picture, a screenshot of you with an augmented reality blue whale on your head? And what do you mean we're talking about whales today? And that's a great question. These are all great questions. And you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to leave you in suspense. We're going to play the next song, and then we're going to talk about whales. So let's get into Love Me Not by Raven Lynae. Sorry, my bad. Raven Lynae. This song, I was, for some reason, under the impression this song had come out, like, many years ago. And imagine my surprise when it came out in 2024. That would be last year. I don't know. It just feels like it's been around for forever. Just me? I don't know. But anyway, love me not. Was Love Me Not by Raven Lynae. Pretty good song, dare I say. And so, yeah, sorry, I was organizing the headphones in here. They're a little bit, it's like, it was like Christmas string lights up in here, so that's all sorted, so no worries about that. But yeah, so about the whales. Well, okay, there's a lot of things going on with the whales. Primarily, the other day, I'm hanging out with my close friend, and one of us is like, you know, surely this train car that we're on right now, famously an old Red Line car, surely, like, this train car is the size of a whale. And I said, that cannot be true. And also, what kind of whale? Because, as we know, there are many kinds of different, there are different kinds of whales. And both of us, well, three of us, actually, we were all talking about that Instagram's post that we saw as of late, and for some reason we had all seen, of a sperm whale hunting and eating a giant squid, and just kind of the premise of that, of like a whale hunting the biggest squid, a lot of questions, right? And then even more questions when it comes to mind that the sperm whale is in fact not the biggest whale, which might be surprising to some of you, hopefully not, as there is the, dare I say, famous blue whale, you know? And the blue whale is really an interesting situation because the blue whale is freaking huge. And we know this, okay? Biggest animal, you know, classic, we know this. But I was like, okay, so how big is the blue whale? Because I, you know, this is a common question. Everyone wants to know, how big is a blue whale? So I look it up. And you know, some Google searches tell me that the biggest blue whale, around 100 feet long. Okay, what does that mean? How much is 100 feet? Like, if I'm looking out into a space, really the question is the whale bigger or smaller than the train car? And how can we do that without measuring the train car? So we're basically trying to put together a thought experiment here. What kind of scale do we need to be able to imagine a blue whale, like AR generate a blue whale in front of us? You know, one might say visualize a blue whale, proportional blue whale. Well, great question. So typically the scale used for blue whales, as we learned, is buses. Your average blue whale is going to be about 2.5 city buses long, not the kinds that bend, the kinds that are solid. Okay. That's important because the bendy ones are longer. So we're working with like 2.5 buses, but I'm thinking, when's the last time I saw three buses parked nose to nose, you know, like nose to tail, like really close. So I'm trying to visualize, I'm looking at one bus, and I obviously there's plenty of buses. I look at one bus, I'm like, that's not really doing it for me. I don't really understand. And then also, okay, sure, we got the length. What about the height? Okay, what about the width? Well, we're talking about a volumetric form. What about the rest of the whale, you know? So we're looking it up. And based on some shoddy math, what can roughly be concluded, okay, again, not a precise measurement happening here, but we decided to measure things in stories, as in stories of buildings, because we were surrounded by buildings, first off, and second off, it just seemed appropriate. And so, let me tell you, if you stood a blue whale up on the tail, it would be 10 stories tall, on average, roughly, maybe 9.5, depending on the building. 9 to 10 stories tall, do you understand that? That's insane. That's crazy. I'm walking around Somerville, Massachusetts, going, these buildings are about 1/3 the size of a blue whale. You stack three buildings on top of each other, that's a blue whale. Okay? But then again, we were realizing, you know, we wouldn't ever really be seeing a blue whale standing up in such a manner, right? Like, if POV, we put a blue whale out here, it would be laying down, no? Or I guess kind of in a neutral whale position. So we're like, okay, maybe the height, standing it up, a little misleading. And also, you know, the foreshortening of it all, it would look very different, right? So we're like, okay, let's try and imagine the whale laid down. How does that look? Because how tall is a whale? Okay, because long is different from tall, as we know. So it turns out, whale's working with about like one story tall. Okay, fine. The whale is also about two stories wide, if we're counting like the tail measurement, okay, theoretically. Again, this is based on, like, looking at a lot of different diagrams, kind of ascertaining a proportional measure, and the idea that American building stories are roughly 10 to 14 feet. Okay? This is, again, all very rough math. But we're thinking about that, and we're looking out onto a track. Track and field, around a soccer field. We're looking at that, we're going, well, how many whales would fit on this? Because, keep in mind, track's quarter of a mile, right? But I was like, I've just done a project about a mile, and there's a lot of feet in a mile. A lot more than 100. So that's telling me that this quarter of a mile is going to be a lot bigger than a blue whale. But I'm looking at the track going, well, but surely 10 stories is pretty big compared to a track and field. Well, get this. So the straight part of the track, right? 100 meter dash. That's three blue whales, roughly. Three blue whales? Do you know what that means? Usain Bolt can run the length of three blue whales laid next to each other, nose to tail, in about 10 seconds. How is that real? How is that a real thing? And that also means a soccer field is, you could fit so many whales on a soccer field. You could fit so many BBWs, biggest blue whale, on a soccer field. Does that make any sense? Because the short side of a soccer field is longer than a blue whale. It's like 200 feet, roughly. Is it, like, what? What? You're joking. Okay, you could fit three blue whales lengthwise on a soccer field. How is that real? Okay, but then you're looking at how little the people look on the soccer field. You're like, okay, maybe that's true. But it just doesn't feel right. Do you know what that means? You could fit 10 three-story buildings laid sideways on a track. What? Like, does that not make sense? But then I'm thinking about the fact that, like, a story is, like, you know, probably, like, 2 times taller than me, right? Let's say I'm like, 5 feet-ish. I'm actually, like, 5'1½", not to brag. But anyway, but I'm, like, roughly 5 feet-ish, right? So then, say, like, your average American's building story is, like, twice my height. And if I laid down on a track, yeah, it really wouldn't be taking up that much space. So I guess it does make sense. But, you know, so we're getting into all these sorts of proportions. It's becoming messy. And then, you know, we're talking about situations from our day. You know, we get distracted from the whales. We're like, okay, enough with the whales. And we're talking about it. And, you know, we're talking about our days. And one of us goes, and our downfall yet again, one of us goes, you know, the situation was really, I guess, I suppose, like krill to a blue whale. And that reminded us of the fact that an animal that is the length of a 10-story building regularly eats shrimp the size of your thumb. And that's about it. Just kind of a lot of those. Granted, a lot of those. But how does that make sense? Because I keep wanting to be like, I keep seeing small things and being like, ah, this must be what it's like. Like, this must be krill to the blue whale. But no, because krill is krill to the blue whale. Like, they regularly deal with a scale that is so small. Could you imagine being 10 stories tall and, like, dealing only with krill? How does that even work? And you know, there's just so many thoughts about it. So we did some more shoddy math, and, like, roughly, like, a short grain of rice is, like, vaguely proportional to, like, a 6'4 guy that's, like, rice is, like, krill to him. So if a 6'4 guy is the biggest blue whale, then a grain of rice is like a krill. Not nutritionally, just in size. Does that not generate questions for you? Because it generates questions for me. That's crazy. My friend was telling, my friend does sports. She does rowing. And she's around a lot of tall people often. And one such tall person told a story that in high school, when they would come back from rowing practice, they get in the shower, and this is our 6'4 BBW prototype, right? Gallon of goldfish, okay, on the top shelf of the shower, scooping handfuls of that, eating it, okay? And then I'm thinking, goldfish by the handful, if you have 6'4 proportionally sized hands, that's crazy. That's like a big blue whale eating krill. But no, the goldfish is a little bit too big, not proportionally. But similar concept. Anyway, that's that we were also talking about whales because of that. Not to call him a whale. He's not a whale, of course, but it's the idea. Anyways, we had so much conversation about, we spent the entire day talking about whales, and we've come to the conclusion that we are going to email a marine biologist to ask some pertinent questions. Number one, how'd they get so big if just krill? How often eat krill if so big? Okay, lots of questions. Did you know a blue whale has a grapefruit-sized throat? So they just basically take a giant gulp of soup, shrimp soup, spit all the soup part out, just keep the shrimp, and then just kind of swallow those, like, down the hatch. And I won't lie, Nemo, the movie, has kind of scared me off of whales for a while, because it's a high-tension scene when they're stuck in the whale, you know, so I try not to think about whales too often. But this is really putting me back onto whales, because now I'm old enough to know that scene's ridiculous, because the grapefruit-sized throat, I personally would never fit down the grapefruit-sized throat. And for a second, I was wondering, like, is the pressure strong enough that I would get crushed into grapefruit-sized swallowable package? And the answer is no. So it turns out the internal pressure of a blue whale is about the same as an external pressure. So if I'm seeing the blue whale and I'm still alive and not crushed into grapefruit size, then I won't be inside, is the idea. So that's comforting in some ways, I suppose. So basically, a blue whale could not eat you, is the answer. So don't worry about that. However, if you think about the fact that, and so, you know, the strength of the tail, the force from the tail, the fluke, if you will, could do, like, crazy, crazy damage. But the whale's so long and you're so small, I feel like you could hide pretty easily amongst the whale. No, just kind of next to it. And then that came to a follow-up question. If the tail of the whale is so deadly and you got to avoid it, you got to be careful of that, right? Makes sense. how do they tag whales? How do you get close enough to a blue whale to tag it? Because they know where they go to migrate, so they must have tagged them, and somehow they're counting them and keeping track of them. How do they do it? Because in my mind, it's kind of like birds, you know, where they, like, tag the leg, that they would just kind of, like, I don't know, put something on the fin, on the flipper, if you will. How do you get close enough to a whale for that? And theoretically, it could just kind of, like, smack you out of the way. Well, how does that work? Well, let me tell you how they tag a blue whale, okay? Because I looked it up. And well, it's a little ridiculous. Basically, they suction cup a satellite receiver to its back. And then when it surfaces for air, the satellite receiver can contact the satellite and send transmissions. But it doesn't work underwater, so it only works when they come up for air. Is that not ridiculous? And the picture is like they've got like an orange suction cup on their back. Like, what? How do you... And okay, more questions. How do you get close enough to a whale to do that? Another question. What's the proportion of marine biologists that have seen a blue whale to those that haven't? Is it like every marine biologist has, yeah, it's like I've seen a blue whale, no big? Or is it like I know a guy, everyone knows at least one guy that's seen a blue whale? Or is it like I know a guy who knows a guy who knows a guy who's seen a blue whale? You know, like how common is it to have seen a blue whale? And do you kind of gain an illustrious status as a marine biologist if you see a blue whale? Not because I'm trying to become a marine biologist and shake things up and see a blue whale and really gain instant fame. I'm not trying to do that, I swear. I just have some questions, and I would like to talk to someone who has seen a blue whale. And I'm trying to determine how hard that would be. And I think I've done some research. There are whale scientists out there. Doesn't seem like they're really within emailing reach. So I'm thinking my best bet is maybe a professor of marine biology. With my Tufts email, I'm going to send him an email and be like, hey, I'm a student. Besides that, I have a lot of questions about whales. And I feel like if I was a professor, I would respond. Is that just me? But like, if I could have asked these questions to ChatGPT, but I didn't. I turned off the AI feature on my Google and I Googled. I Googled and I opened up sources. And then, so this came to a lot. I realized I know next to nothing about marine biology through this exercise. And I realized that, how do they move dolphins over land? Because I think in my child years, I was like, maybe they just only move along rivers and they just have the dolphins swim in the river. Kind of like walking a dog. But that evidently doesn't seem right now that I am of a sentient age. So I looked it up and I read a paper from 1972. And you might be like, 1972, a little outdated for research. Like, I don't know if that still applies. I feel like it applies. It seemed to have applied at least for like the basis of how things are done today. And let me just say, incredibly informative paper. There was diagrams, there was everything. And specifically in the introduction, it talked about how we're kind of reaching the peak of the dolphin craze, the start of the dolphin craze. And I was like, maybe the 70s really were all about dolphins. I don't really know, I wasn't there. But let me tell you, you might be like, how do you move a dolphin across state lines? Here's how you do it. By plane. What? My first instinct is boat. You know, water animal in the boat. But then I realized, that's not going to work. And famously, if you've watched Finding Dory, they put the fish in a truck. Okay, they put them in tanks in a truck. But I was like, dolphin so large, tank so large, truck too small? Then how big are we? How big is a dolphin? Dolphin's not that big, don't worry. It would fit in a truck, but they don't do that. They put them in planes. And the way they put them in planes is so it's a little ridiculous because they take the dolphin, they make a sling for it, okay, so its little flippers can stick out, and then they lift it, and they basically build a little infrastructure for it. And you might think submerged in tank. You would be wrong, because let's remember, dolphins are mammals, so they need to breathe air. So they keep them wet, moist, with a sprinkler system. Okay, custom dolphin sprinkler system. Greased. They got to keep them greased. They basically cover them in aquaphor. It's lanolin, but they basically cover them in aquaphor. Okay, sprinkle them. And now I'm also wondering about the order of operations here, because surely if you covered them in grease and then sprinkled them, the sprinkles just kind of rolling off. So I have questions about that. And then I was like, is there a company that's in charge of moving dolphins? And the answer is there's no one company in charge of moving dolphins. Surprise. But there is multiple large, like, specialty cargo companies that can move dolphins. And there are specialty, like, marine animal situations marine animal companies that move dolphins. Okay. So, yeah, you might be wondering, how do they move large aquatic animals from aquarium to aquarium? Because I'm thinking, what I was thinking about also is, like, if they're rehabilitating an animal, but they move it somewhere else, where do they put it? Well, they put it in a plane, and they bring it there. It kind of feels, I won't say similar to the experience, but in line with the experience, as when I found out they put pandas on airplanes, and they just give them a seat. And granted, I don't know if that's because those pandas are, like, special diplomatic pandas, which often they are, but, like, it seems kind of, like, in, like, yeah, you would just give the panda a seat, I suppose. But, yeah, so apparently also the dolphins, you might be like, are they sedated for this journey? Because if I was a dolphin and I was put in a sling and then greased and then sprinkled on and also put in a plane, I would kind of freak out. And it turns out that because they're out of the water, out of the water for the time period that they are, they basically, all of their, like, they're running on adrenaline. So they don't freak out because they're like, I have to stay alive. So they basically kind of just turn off all, if they're wet enough, they don't have to worry about being wet. So they basically just kind of turn off all their other functions and focus on staying alive. But that means they can get cold. And they can shiver. Okay, thought of a dolphin shivering. Not liking that. So, yeah, basically that's what's going on with dolphins and whales. In case you were wondering. And I may or may not have just spent 15 minutes talking, maybe even more, talking about whales. It's a lot. I have so many whale facts now. I'll tell you, you wouldn't believe what a Google will do for you. And that marine biologist is about to get a lot of questions out of me. Because the more I learn about whales, the more questions that I have, frankly. Anyway, so whales are very big. So next time you look at a 10-story building, go, that's a big blue whale. The BBUW, the biggest blue whale, is about the size of that building, give or take. And so basically, yeah, everything I've been looking at is now in whale size or krill size. Turns out krill can swarm into swarms of about 30,000 per 10 square feet, which is, okay, I have a lot of questions about that as well. They also can apparently reach speeds of 2 feet per second. Like, what? That's like the speed of someone, like, punching you in the face. Like, that's insane. Right? That would be the speed of, like, me punching you in the face, because my arm is about, like, 2 feet-ish, if wingspan equal to height to be believed. So, yeah, anyway, that's crazy. And apparently some krill swarms can be seen from space. And then I have follow-up questions. Whales' eyes are on kind of, like, the side of their head quite far back, you know, we know this. What are they looking at? What do they need those to see? Because you would think the krill would want to be, because their mouths are in front, so you would think the krill, you'd want to see the krill from the front. So it's like, do they turn to the side, grab a look, and then kind of swivel around and take a bite? Or, like, what is a whale's field of vision? So I'm going to be asking for a diagram for the marine biologist, because I would like to know the field of vision of a blue whale, because I think that would really change things. And then also, it's like, how good is their vision? Proportionally, their eyes are tiny compared to their body. How much can they really see? Are they seeing the krill? Are they echolocating the krill? I have a lot of questions about that as well. I imagine they're echolocating, but I don't know how true that is. Maybe it's so obvious. Maybe the krill are just everywhere. But they're not like plankton, where it's just, like, mixed into the water. It is like they're swarms. They're solid swarms of krill. Anyway, so I've really been diagnosing things. Not only are buildings now in size of whales, I would say situations have become krilluations now, if you think about it. Because, you know, some things are so small that I'm like, this is like krill to a BBW like myself. So really, this is a krilluation. Granted, 30,000 krilluations for 10 square feet would maybe be a problem that you could see from space. But, you know, one krill, what are you going to do? So I think that's really been helping my winner mindset, because I've been thinking about, you know, if I'm the BBW, well, first of all, I could run the 100-meter dash so quick. And also, you might be wondering, what about swimming? Michael Phelps can swim the length of 3 big blue whales about 50 seconds. Okay, what? And also, they can fit in an Olympic-sized pool with, like, a little bit of clearance. What? Sorry, what? And then, you know, also you might be like, how fast? Because, like, could Michael Phelps race a big blue whale? The biggest blue whale? Answer, probably no. But the big blue whale, I don't have the math. Oh, actually, maybe yes. I don't have the math skills to figure this out, and nor the desire to figure this out. But the cruising speed of a blue whale is about 5 to 14 miles per hour, depending on how casual they are, which is really slow for something that big. However, if they're escaping from predators, they move at a speed they can sprint at 30 miles per hour. Could you imagine something the size of 10 stories moving at 30 miles per hour? Because I could not. The average walking speed of a human is about 3 to 4 miles per hour, apparently. So just some numbers to think about, right? Is that not crazy? And then you might be like, what is hunting a blue whale? Orcas, apparently. I don't really know. I didn't really look too much into it. But, you know, if you could be any whale, what kind of whale would you be? And obviously my instinct is like, I want to be an orca, because that sounds pretty cool. Granted, orcas do have blue holes. They are whales. So I think being an orca would be pretty awesome, but I think if I'm to be real with myself and exclude ego from the conversation, I'm not an orca. I think that's unfortunately true. I would like to be one, but that's kind of the same idea as, like, you would like to ride a motorcycle, but you wouldn't survive. I wouldn't survive the orca lifestyle. However, I don't think I would survive the blue whale lifestyle either. You know, I think it's not for me. I think being that large would be a little bit lonely, maybe. I don't know. Something to think about. So I'm kind of settling on, like, a humpback whale, just like a real classic whale. Really classic. Because I don't really like the shape of sperm whales. Is that racist? I don't know. But the sperm whales species, it's really coming back to that video of the giant squid, because the skinny mouth on it, have you seen it? It's so weird. I urge you to look it up. It's crazy. I don't like that. I wouldn't want my mouth to look like that. So I think I would like to be a humpback whale. Just classic whale shape. You know? That or an orca. But that's, we're being wishful, I think. So you might be like, Janie, it's 3:32. Surely you had some music planned for us. And you would be right. I do have some music planned. After our whale sidetracking, I think we need to get back to some music. So let's get back into it. The next two songs I have for the next two songs I have for us are Bad Boy by Red Velvet and Automatic by Hikaru Utada. And Bad Boy by Red Velvet, I just watched the Genius video about how this song was made, and basically it was made by, like, the magic of the full moon. Like, I don't know, it's awesome. And I recommend watching it if you are interested in Red Velvet or Bad Boy or anything like that. But yeah, we're gonna get into it. We're gonna listen to some Asian R&B. Call me crazy.
Yeah.
That was Automatic by Hikaru Utada. Good stuff. And I'm back thinking about whales, as per usual. And you might be like, Janie, I didn't know you were so into whales. I didn't know you were so into marine biology. This has really only started about yesterday, maybe the day before. So what's today? Today's Monday? This started, I would say, on Friday. So more than a few days ago, or I guess exactly a few days ago. And I don't really know what sparked this sudden interest, but I'm just so into it. And whales, I have so many questions about whales and marine life in general. It doesn't seem to make a lot of sense to me, which I suppose I understand. As a land animal, I can't really, I don't have a lot of understanding of the way sea creatures work. Like, whose bright idea was it to have a mammal that breathes air but lives in the ocean? What? That doesn't make any sense. That'd be like if I breathed water. What? You know, like, it confuses me. And I won't lie, I feel a little bit stupid sometimes for not knowing anything about whales. But then I was like, how much does your average person know about whales? And, well, let me tell you, I knew next to nothing about whales before I started this. I mean, I knew some basic things, but I'm not knowing everything about whales, evidently by my Google search. My Google search history is whale-ridden. It's serious. Literally, the tab I have an open right now is Longest Blue Whale. It's ridiculous. My Friday search, what is lanolin from the dolphin thing? Is there a company in charge of shipping dolphins? How heavy are dolphins? You know, this sort of thing. How many moose long are whales? Turns out whales, meese are about moose. A moose is about a story tall, if that adds anything to your... And also, okay, let's think about the giant squid. Famously, the sperm whale is about half the size of a blue whale. On average, and it's eating giant squid. And let's also keep in mind the fact that the giant squid has the largest eye in the animal kingdom, apparently 10 inches in diameter. That's like a dinner plate, dude. Could you imagine your eyeball being that big? So my question is, if they came to the surface of the water You know, maybe we gave them a giant contact full of water so that their eye stays moist, and they opened their eyeball and looked up into space. Could they, like, see the entire moon? You know what I mean? Like, could they, like, see stars that are, like, very far away? Because theoretically, like, the bigger the lens is, the more you can see, because the more light can go in, right? I did take intro to astronomy, thank you. But, like, theoretically, then the squid could see super duper far. And the reason it has that big of an eyeball is because it's, like, down deep, so it's dark, and there's not a lot of light anyway, so it has to catch what little there is. But if you brought it all the way up to the surface, like, would it go blind? Well, you'd have to bring it up at night, I'd imagine, because it'd be too bright otherwise. But imagine it's late at night. You bring a squid onto the surface of the water, and you have it look into the sky, and you can figure out what it saw. Squid telescope. Lots of questions about that. And also, apparently, the myth of the Kraken, that, like, you know, like, they destroy ships, and it's like a giant squid destroying ships, we know this. That comes from the fact that when giant squid are, like, about to die, I was told this by a friend, by the way, who was told this by the professor, so, credible source. But apparently what happens is when they're about to die, they get kind of filled with, like, gross gas, like toxic gas, and they basically, they float to the surface of the ocean because they are filled with gross gas, and then they flip out because they're so confused because they're at the surface of the water and they're filled with gross gas. And if you are a wooden ship next to said gross giant death squid, Kraken. There you go. Get caught in the clutches. And apparently, the giant squid's suction cups are so strong, they leave scars on sperm whales. So imagine that against some wood. Jover for you. As a ship. You know? Something to think about. Giant squids, you know, I also have a lot to think about. If you took a giant squid out of the deep ocean, would it turn just kind of into a blob? Like blobfish? Something to think about. Anyway, I've been thinking so much about whales for the past 3 days that it's almost shocking. It is shocking. Yeah, I would say. Especially since I have no history of marine biology in my field of interests. But yeah, separately, completely separately, the other thing I've been thinking a lot about is the Martin Pryor show at the MFA, the Museum of Fine Arts. Because lest we forget, someone is studying fine arts, and that would be me. So the Martin Pryor show is, like, let me just say, it's thebomb.com. It's really great. And I would really recommend, if you're in the Boston area, go see the MFA show. It's on the second floor next to that giant thing with the cups, where it's, like, all the cups stuck together with the light inside. Right above the gift store, kind of, the cafe gift store thing. It's right above that. The contemporary wing. And you walk in, first of all, I was not familiar with Martin Pryor before this show, because I'm a noob, and I didn't know, my bad. And a little embarrassing as a sculpture student, I'm learning, a little embarrassing. But my professor took us there, and my professor is what I can only describe as a Martin Pryor stan. He was in there like he was meeting the goat himself. And I understand, because the show was amazing. And it's always a weird feeling being introduced to, a monolith of a field through, like, the best exhibit you could. Because then it's, like, any exhibit I see after this is going to be, like, kind of lame. Like, I'm going to see one Martin Pryor work in, like, a museum from now on. You know what I mean? But they're all here, all together, all at once, and it's like, oh my gosh, crazy. And it really brings up a lot of questions for me, where what happens when you're the GOAT? What happens when you're LeBron James? Do you get bored? You know what I mean? Because, let me just say, Martin Pryor, something he's really known, like, he's universally known for just being so goated. He is so good at what he does, not only, like artistically, conceptually, as a fine artist, are people like, he's a genius, but also, like, the things that he makes are to such a standard that people are like, I don't think it's possible to get better than this. Like, he is the best. Which is just, like, a crazy statement that you can make about someone if they're, like, the good that he has to be in order to be the best woodworker. You know what I mean? Like, it's insane. But basically, one of the things that he does, one of many things that he does, is that imagine a ship made out of wood. Imagine, a pirate ship. You know, the boards are kind of, like, laid on the outside, right? Viking ship style. He basically takes that technique and makes these orbs out of wood that are basically, there's some sort of internal structure, and then thin pieces of perfectly cut wood are laid over it to create a complete sphere, okay? And they're like 4 feet big. And the precision with which the wood is laid makes it so that they all meet at a perfect point in the middle, and everything is perfectly shaped, and there's no gaps. You can't see in it. And if you were to cover it in like a little bit of tar, that it would float for sure. It's basically watertight already. It's crazy. And it's like so perfect and everything, but there's like very visible like nail, like where he puts the nails in, like you can still see it, like he doesn't cover them in any way. And it's like intentional because he's like so goaded that like he wouldn't do that not on purpose, because if he didn't want those, he could just get rid of them, because he does in some pieces. He has this giant thing called, the piece is called Self. It's probably like 4 or 5 feet tall, if not taller. I'm trying to remember if I was looking it in the eyes or not. And it basically just looks like this giant black round, like if a child, you ask a child to draw a hill with a black crayon, it's kind of like that. And but it's all made out of wood, like pieces of wood puzzled together and then like finished to like a shine, and there's like a black shine on it. It's so crazy. It's so cool. I highly recommend, if you get the chance, to check this out, because it's like huge. It's huge stuff. And then I'm thinking about it, and I'm gonna go see the show again for another class. My other studio, we're gonna see the show again. But what I wonder is, does it get boring being the best? It doesn't seem like he's bored, so that's pretty awesome. But I am wondering, like, well, also, it's like, what do you do when you know you can never be as goated as Martin Puryear? I wonder what it's like to be, like, an NBA player and know that you'll never be as goated as LeBron. Like, no matter how good you are, you'll just never be as good as LeBron James. So it's like, what, like, I will never be as good as Martin Puryear, right? And theoretically, I bring other things to the table. But I will never be as good as Martin Puryear. And then I was like, can I email him? I know he's like 80-something. Do you think he reads his emails? And I don't know, maybe you can just call Taylor up. I don't really know. I'll let you guys know how that marine biologist email goes, because if that works and if I get a response from a, like, the premier whale marine biologist, that's really going to change things for me. I'm just going to start emailing everyone. And okay, famously it's 3:50 and I do have to read my PSA and I do have to play more music and I do have a lot to do. So let's get into the PSA. I thought there was a PSA about the Somerville Community Bike Path, but there isn't, so that's just going to be kind of a separate PSA from me personally. Go check out the Somerville Community Bike Path. It's beautiful. Maxwell Green, beautiful. Check it out. But this is a PSA about knowing your cell phone rights. Whether you're taking your cell phone with you on a walk, in your car, or through a civil process, you should know your legal rights. The U.S. Supreme Court unanimously ruled that police must obtain a warrant to search a person's cell phone. However, a phone without a passcode can be readily searched by anybody holding it. And a Virginia court recently ruled that a defendant can be compelled to unlock a device that is protected only by a fingerprint sensor. So consider using a key code password and setting your phone screen to lock very quickly when no one is using it, particularly if you expect to be in a volatile situation. While the police can't legally force you to unlock your phone, they can ask you to, and if you do that, you have forfeited your rights. The correct answer to a cop's request to search you, your vehicle, or your phone is no, officer. I do not consent to a search. Thank you. Finally, remember that the police can always ask a judge for a search warrant. So think carefully about what is stored on your phone, including photos, data, contact, and app data. You can learn more about your rights from the Electronic Freedom Foundation on the web at EFF.org. This has been a public service message from the EFF and your freedom-loving friends here at WMFO, Medford Tufts Educational Radio. An important thing to think about. And I'm thinking we got maybe time for two more songs. And in honor of maybe the worst album in the world dropping, shall not be named, we're going to listen to Honey, Mariah Carey. Let's get into it. Honey got me hooked on you.
Come on. MC. hold it right here. Cause we gonna smooth it out. Come on. MC. And she won't stop.
Honey by Mariah Carey. Classic, classic. My last song that I will leave you with is going to be Losing You by Solange. You've been listening to 91.5 WMFO Medford Touch Reform Radio. Stay hype, stay excited for Colin and Soapy Serenades. Classic. And once again, if you have any questions about whales, let me know and I will add them to my email to the marine biologist. And I'll get back to you guys on that. Hopefully he responds. Or she, or they. That is my bad. Hopefully, they respond. So thank you for listening, everyone, to my whales and squids and dolphins. And I have to go 3D print my 3D print homework. Maybe I should 3D print a whale. Or a krill, I suppose, would be more accurate. Maybe I'll 3D print a quill. Oh, a krill. Okay. Now, a little clip of Losing You by Solange, seeing as we only have 1 minute. So let's get into Losing You by Solange. Have a good week, guys.